Some people believe the celebrations on May Day began with the tree worship of the Druids. Others believe that they go back to the spring festivals of ancient Egypt and India. All that notwithstanding, in 1889 in Paris, a Congress of World Socialist Parties voted to support the United States labor movement's demands for an 8-hour day. It chose May 1st, 1890, as a day of demonstrations in favor of the 8-hour day. Afterwards, in many nations, May 1st became a holiday called Labor Day. Saigon, Vietnam, May 1st, 1966. Vietnamese workers demonstrate in front of the American embassy. Dale Miner reports for Pacifica Radio.
As they announced during the demonstration, the formal purpose of the demonstration was to deliver to the U.S. embassy a petition, quote, from the workers of Vietnam to workers and peace feelers of the United States, end quote.
For a whole block now, they've scribbled slogans, anti-American slogans on the pavement, saying, Americans go home, U.S. stop the war in Vietnam, no more bombing, no more poison chemicals, etc., etc.
Only once did anything like a fracas occur. That was when a small group of city policemen tried to take one of the demonstrators into custody.
Apparently, several policemen tried to grab one of the young demonstrators and drag him away, and the whole crowd surged over here and they let him go. And now the police have retreated back, and the person they grabbed has also retreated back into the crowd.
Organized labor in Vietnam today is in a position similar to that of the Buddhists under Tsim, but without the cohesion, discipline, and organization the Buddhists were able to summon then. Under Tsim, and under each of the military juntas which have succeeded him, including the present one, labor has been viewed with a great deal of suspicion. The CVT, the Confederation of Workers' Unions, is headed by a Mr. Bu, who is well thought of among U.S. officials here as a kind of Vietnamese George Meany. But Mr. Bu could not prevent a large portion of his May Day celebration from ending up before the U.S. Embassy, calling for an immediate end to the war and for Americans to go home. In any case, Vietnamese labor is badly organized and very much under the government's thumb, even at this time. Of the three labor organizations applying, only two were given permission to parade on May Day. And those were told by the government what kind of slogans would be permitted and what kind would not. That the government was defied in the latter case is an indication of its considerable weakness in the lame duck days prior to the scheduled elections.
As somebody from the labor movement, I can't imagine a time when the lessons of international solidarity among working people of all countries are more critical. This is a time when, not in theory, but in fact, American workers are losing their jobs because American industry is outsourcing to make more profit. And this is a time when the barriers that have grown between workers in the United States and workers in other nations really need to be torn down. Because if they're not, we are not going to be able to deal with industry and with corporate capital because their boundaries have never really existed. So if workers in this country, young workers, are serious about being able to protect their jobs and their futures, we need to collectively understand the lessons of Vietnam and understand that our future is very, very bound with the future of people in other nations. ...1970, New Haven, Connecticut. A rally in support of the incarcerated Black Panther Nine addresses the issue of violent versus nonviolent tactics.
We welcome you to New Haven, we welcome you to struggle with us, and we ask you to conduct that struggle with revolutionary commitment to the peoples of New Haven, to the task of keeping the struggle going beyond these 2 days, and we ask you to be disciplined, because the highest duty of a revolutionary is to be disciplined on behalf of the people, and that is what we ask of you. All power to the people, to be disciplined. This is not the time for violence here, and you know it, and we here in New Haven know it as well. It is not the time, because the struggle has just only begun.
The main object of this weekend's activity in New Haven, Connecticut, was of course to show support for the Black Panther Nine, 8 local Panther Party members and National Chairman Bobby Seale, all of whom are accused of killing a fellow Panther member, Alex Rackley, after he allegedly turned police informer. Another issue also began to obscure the reason for the May Day rally, the presidential announcement of the night before that American ground troops had been given White House permission to make forays into Cambodian territory. This topic as well was much to be talked about by the demonstrators on May Day, and it too might have overshadowed the Panther support rally. But Chicago 7 defendant David Dellinger was able to draw the two issues together at the Friday morning press conference.
On the very eve of this protest, they have announced that they are sending thousands of troops into Cambodia. And what happens in the internal colony and what happens in the external colony cannot be separated. Now, as somebody dedicated to nonviolence, I want to say something about the hypocrisy of all of the talk about violence and nonviolence here. The real issue is that they've been holding Bobby Seale and these other people in jail under intolerable conditions as part of a coordinated plot, a plot coordinated in Washington, which has included the murder of Fred Hampton, little Bobby Hunton, and 26 others, has included the kind of raids on Panther headquarters that Big Man just talked about. And to try to transform the issue into whether the demonstrators would be peaceful or not peaceful is hypocritical and a complete lie. The fact is that the U.S. government has its hands dripping with the blood of Panthers and other black people. It is... And we simply cannot allow the issue to be shifted from what happens to Bobby Seale to what happened to the protesters and the demonstrators. Now, secondly, on a day when the government should be announcing that it is dropping all charges, instead, it has announced the beginning of a second similar case. Now, we simply cannot allow them to get away with this. They have been utterly provocative. They have set up a trap in which they are prepared to attack here, and we are not going to walk into that trap. Today is the beginning of a series of episodes in New Haven which will continue until Bobby Seale and the others are free. And we will not allow Attorney General Mitchell, Spiro Agnew, Richard Nixon, or the National Guard to provoke us into a violent encounter today, which would be disastrous for the people who are in the black community and for the people who have come here. But it is only possible for us to resolve to stay out of that trap if we equally resolve to keep coming back or to stay here, because basically the Conspiracy 8 has now moved to New Haven, Connecticut. So we can only resolve to keep our cool and not to be provoked into false violence and a false conflict today as long as all of us equally resolve to stay here, to keep coming back, until all eight are free.
Next, we look at how May Day is celebrated around the world, as Pacifica correspondents Daniel Singer, Alan Snitow, and others report from Mexico City, Italy, Mozambique, and Angola in this program called May Day 1977.
Now, you know you're underpaid, but the boss says you ain't. He speeds up the work till you're about to faint. You may be down and out, but you ain't beaten. You can pass out a leaflet and call a meeting. Talk it over. Speak your mind. Decide to do something about it. Of course, the boss may persuade some poor damn fool to go to your meeting and act like a stool.
May 1st, 1977, International Workers' Day. For 90 years, May Day has been a day for workers' celebrations worldwide. Although the day originated in 1886 in the United States, it has always been observed with great respect outside our country. Massive celebrations took place in honor of the working class throughout the world today, and KPFA gathered information on some of them.
Be mighty lonely. Everybody decided to walk out on him. Suppose the working you so hard it's just outrageous, and they're paying you all starvation wages. You go to the boss and the boss would yell, before I raise your pay, I'd see you all in hell. Well, he's puffing a big cigar, feeling mighty slick, because he thinks he's got your union licked. Well, he looks out the window and what does he see but 1,000 pickets, and they all agree he's a bastard. Unfair. Slave driver. Bet he beats his wife.
Not much happened in the U.S. today, as first WBAI reports from New York, and then KPFA from Berkeley.
From all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son, and I'll stick with the Union till every battle's won. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Oh, tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
May Day, a day of solidarity and celebration for workers around the world. Over 400 people, laborers and their families, turned out in New York's Union Square today to voice their solidarity and call for job reforms. Just as the trade union movement has been, to a great extent, co-opted in this country, so in Mexico has the entire revolution been twisted. Today, Mexicans were asked by the state to celebrate their poverty, inequity, and frustration.
From Mexico City, the left independent periodical Punto Crítico informs regarding the celebration of 1st of May in the Mexican Republic. The most important demonstration, like other years, was the one that was organized by the state-controlled trade union, and it was nothing but a clear illustration of the politics of class conciliation that has been imposed on the workers in the middle of the deep economic crisis. The participants in the official demonstration were obliged to assist under menace, and the contingents were jealously supervised by a queer combination of the trade union gangsters and the state police. During the severe economic crisis in which the country is submerged, it is particularly relevant that the petitions of the state-controlled workers' movement just include the price control and does not demand wage increase. This means that the state is trying to discharge the whole weight of the crisis over the back of the workers. However, this year, as during the last 5 years, the apparent conformity has been broken by the militant presence of independent workers in various cities, not only in Mexico City, but also in sites with a very important workers' concentration, at Guadalajara, Saltillo, Monterrey, Chihuahua, Los Mochis, Cuernavaca, Matias Romero, and Zacatecas. The independent left forces realized demonstration, rising the demands most deeply felt by the working class, that are an end to the laying off of workers, reinstallation of the laid-off, no to wage freezing, effective price control. The fact that thousands of workers organized their own demonstrations in the best is the best indication that the trade union bureaucracy control mechanism is losing efficiency. Punto Crítico greets the North American workers' movement, wishing that the international 1st of May will signify an impulse to the workers' struggle. Unidos venceremos.
Compaño, cuando quipa la idea con la pena que cuida noi si chiama intellettuale. Prova ogni giorno la rivoluzione con il martello, la falce, il fucile. E a tutto questo la sua penna è uguale.
Milano, primo maggio, May Day. The turnout was smaller than usual today, with 30 to 40,000 people marching to the Piazza del Duomo in front of Milan's Gothic Cathedral. Milan is Italy's second largest city and the center of its industry. For the past 20 years, it has been an economic boom town, but the boom has collapsed. The lira is falling in value, unemployment rises, living standards fall, the workers are angry, and the left, particularly the Communist Party, is strong. One would expect a massive mobilization for the International Workers' Day in Milan, but it is Sunday, and the weather's bad. It's been cold and rainy all week. The communist-led local government is a sponsor of the demonstration along with the Trade Union Triad Confederation. It was an official event. We marched for half an hour with the union delegations and officials leading the way. Not too many of the rank and file came this Sunday. Then came the progressive Catholics, followed by the less than progressive Christian Democrats who still run the national government, even if they now made communist extensions or need communist extensions to stay in power. The followers of the Christian Democrats were themselves followed by a few hecklers shouting, "Away, away with those in the service of the CIA." And then came the left, the PC, as the Partito Comunista Italiano is called, with section after section, the largest single contingent. And then all the groups of the far left, PDUP Manifesto and just PDUP, a split so new the names haven't changed yet. Workers' Vanguard, the Maoist MLS. Then came feminist groups and a contingent from Eritrea calling for support to the liberation struggle there. Then Lotta Continua, continuing struggle, with anarchist groups bringing up the tail. As each group goes by, its militants hold up its newspapers, often nationally distributed daily. For the PC, it is l'Unità. As the last contingents reach the square, there is a non-violent but not friendly confrontation. As the Lotta Continua marchers, most of them students or former students, are virtually surrounded by communist militants. The Lotta Continua militants hold their papers high, chanting, while the communists hold up their copies of l'Unità and shout, "Down with false autonomy." The confrontation is a mild one, but it involves the major and somewhat unusual slogan chosen by the Communist Party for this May Day. Class struggle, it says, will be carried out by the workers, but with provocateurs, we will not succeed. The provocateurs are for the Italian Communist Party, those people who pressed for the recent violent student demonstrations, as well as people in what are being called workers' autonomy organizations. these new movements do not appear to have deep roots. They seem to be in response to current high levels of unemployment among youth, many of whom view the Communist Party as part of the establishment, a charge that is disturbing some members of the party itself. The slogan appeared to reveal the atmosphere and the annoyance of the PC with its policy failures as it is today, as if to say, leave us alone to carry out the struggle. There was almost no mention of the ruling class, of the Christian Democrats, of the bourgeoisie, of the corporations, of the CIA. It is now a turning point for the Italian left. Powerful as it is, many leftists in the PC and out of it are increasingly disoriented and upset with the policy of cooperation between the PC and the government. Today's demonstration was perfunctory. It was done because May Day comes once a year. We marched for half an hour. There was a little confrontation for 15 minutes. And as we turned away from the L'Unità Lotta Continua face-off, workers in blue denim were already quickly taking down the speaker's platform, and the crowd was dispersing, leaving the Piazza del Duomo once again to the tourists and the pigeons. In Milan, this is Alan Snitow for Pacifica Radio.
Throughout Eastern and Southern Africa, workers celebrated May Day where they could, and plans for the future in those places where they could not celebrate. There were no May Day celebrations in the white minority-ruled states of South Africa and Rhodesia, and workers were similarly prevented from demonstrating in reactionary black-ruled states such as Malawi. Expressing the aspirations of workers from those countries was left to exiles. A statement issued here in Dar es Salaam by the South African Congress of Trade Unions pointed out that it is not racial discrimination alone which oppresses the black workers of South Africa. The statement said that the question of racial discrimination, apartheid, segregation, or what have you, stems from the vicious capitalist and colonial system in our country. And the Congress went on to condemn the United States, Britain, West Germany, France, Italy, Canada, Belgium, and Japan for steadfastly supporting capitalism in South Africa. The statement said that these countries often speak out against racial discrimination, but they continue to support capitalist exploitation and are therefore the enemies of the workers of South Africa. Rhodesian nationalists had no time for demonstrations or statements and concentrated instead on intensifying their guerrilla struggle against the white minority regime of Ian Smith. Military leaders of the Zimbabwe African National Union, ZANU, and the Zimbabwe African People's Union, ZAPU, began meeting here in Dar es Salaam to work out the integration of their fighting forces so as to be better able to pursue their war of national liberation. But workers from many reactionary black-ruled states also had to celebrate May Day in secrecy or exile. Here in Dar es Salaam, refugees from Malawi held an all-night memorial meeting last night for a fellow refugee who had recently died in Zambia. The meeting was attended by members of the Malawi Socialist League, and participants said that the eve of May Day was chosen because the death of any person in exile is a political event. In contrast, workers here in Tanzania held May Day celebrations throughout the country. Processions of workers marched through every town and many villages. But in speeches, President Julius Nyerere and Prime Minister Edward Sokoine had some stern advice for Tanzanian workers. Sokoine told a rally in the town of Dodoma that workers would have to display more motivation and discipline in the future. And President Nyerere warned against the growing gap between Tanzania's small working class and the country's peasants. But in Mozambique, the May Day celebrations were unequivocal. Red banners flew in cities, towns, and villages, and enthusiastic crowds turned out in huge numbers to hear speeches praising proletarian internationalism. At a rally in the capital, Maputo, Vice President Marcelino dos Santos told a cheering crowd that President Samora Machel had just been selected as a recipient of the Lenin Peace Prize. And Mozambican workers made another major advance on Saturday when the government announced that workers will be represented on the board of directors of all state-owned corporations. The government also announced that all managers will have to spend a part of each year doing work directly related to production. 3 years ago, there were no May Day celebrations in Mozambique because the country was still under colonialism. Workers in South Africa, Rhodesia, and Malawi spoke to Mozambique today as an example of what the future holds for them. Tony Avergan, Dar es Salaam.
1, 2, 3, ding. La la la.
While May Day celebrations in the U.S. are relatively tame compared to other parts of the world, WBAI producer Bruce Soloway, armed with a tape recorder and a New York City police-issued press badge, reports on the confrontational May Day demonstration in 1971 from the nation's capital.
This is Bruce Soloway, Pacifica Radio, New York. On Monday, May 3, 1971, tens of thousands of men and women attempted to block morning rush hour traffic in Washington, D.C., in an effort to shut down the government as a protest against the Vietnam War. The May Day tribe's chosen tactic was nonviolent civil disobedience, illegal but peaceful acts of assembly and obstruction of traffic. The protest was met by a specially mobilized force of Washington police and National Guardsmen who arrested over 7,000 people, the largest one-day mass arrest for a single incident in American history. Of the more than 7,000 people arrested, about 1,700 were placed in an outdoor football practice field on the outskirts of Washington. They were kept there by a force of hundreds of military police armed with M-14s. Not until hours after this detention camp was opened did the government begin to provide food, water, and sanitation facilities. The toilets provided by the government for these 1,700 people were open garbage pails. The food was soggy bologna sandwiches. During the day, only volunteer lawyers and later a few reporters and congressmen were permitted to enter and leave the camp. At night, the prisoners were moved to the D.C. Coliseum, where they were again surrounded by military police, and many slept on the Coliseum's concrete floor while they awaited legal processing. Most of the prisoners in the camp were young people connected in some way with the May Day protest. But there were others. A young girl arrested while walking her dog, a 12-year-old boy who had been walking with his sister near his home, students on their way to classes. Abby Hoffman spent some time in the camp before he was taken to the hospital to have his broken nose set and his face stitched up. Dr. Benjamin Spock spent the whole day there as a prisoner, and several reporters had been arrested. I was one of them.
We are not afraid!
Excuse me. Could you tell me what happened over at the bridge?
They wouldn't let us
through. We started approaching, and they came from in front of us and the side and the back of us and, you know, forced us to come this way.
How far to the bridge? How close to the bridge did you get?
We got just a couple of blocks further up. I don't know. That's about a block and a half from the bridge, I guess.
Did you approach it in a group or as individuals?
In a group, yes.
What, have they told you how long they're going to hold you here on the street corner?
No, they haven't told us anything except, don't move until we tell you to move.
Have you broken any laws?
We haven't broken any law as far as we know, and we haven't been warned of any, anything.
Where are you from?
From Washington. We're all from Washington.
Okay, thanks a lot. A truck has just pulled up, a police truck.
We shall live in peace.
The police are now arresting the demonstrators. What are the charges here, officer?
Unlawful assembly.
This is a group of about 100 people who are now being arrested for unlawful assembly. We're now at one of the entrances to the 14th Street Bridge. The demonstrators have moved out into the street, blocking off traffic at the entrance. That looks like tear gas canisters, and that's what it is. Everybody's yelling, walk. Tear gas canisters have been set off at this entrance to the 14th Street Bridge adjacent to the tidal basin. Looks like only about five or six of them, but they're still fuming. And I'm about 200 feet from where the canisters went off. This entrance to the bridge will not be useful for a while. One man has sat down, cross-legged, with his fist raised in the air, breathing a tear gas. And a medical marshal is trying to pull him away. He's refusing to go. A huge crowd of people has stopped to watch. The wind is blowing across the highway so that the gas is not blowing back very quickly towards where the people are standing. So people can stand here and watch what's happening. That young man is still sitting there, fist clenched, raising the air, only about 20 or 30 feet from where the tear gas is going off. Gas is starting to reach here now. The demonstrators are moving, apparently without resistance, up the exit ramp of the 14th Street Bridge. And the police now are turning onto the exit ramp. No, they're stopping. They're stopping at the bottom of the exit ramp and holding their positions. Some, but not all of them, are wearing gas masks. Several tear gas canisters have already gone off in this area. On the entrance ramp, which goes up on the other side of the bridge, exactly symmetrical to this exit ramp. Several hundred people are still blocking traffic on the exit ramp, or at least slowing it down. Cars are moving through the group one by one as they find openings to get through. There was an army officer in an orange Mustang. He was smiling and talking to the demonstrators as he came by. Tear gas is very strong up here. I'm going to have to move out. In fact, the demonstrators are fighting the same thing. They're moving out too, down the exit ramp. I can't tell from here whether more tear gas has been fired or whether this is the remaining gas from the last tear gas volley on the other side of the bridge. Quarter of 14th at Independence. Tear gas has just been set off on the grounds of the Washington Monument. And demonstrators and government employees alike are walking around with handkerchiefs over their faces, trying to get to wherever they're going. A few people have been affected fairly seriously by the gas. Sitting down and just waiting for the effects to clear. I'm walking back down 14th Street towards C Street. Try to get away from the gas. It's a little clearer down here than it was up there. There's a pretty heavy volley up on the Washington Monument. Time now is 7:15 in the morning. We're back on Independence Avenue and 12th Street now. An area that's devoted largely to the Department of Agriculture, several buildings. And there are about 75 people standing in the street at the corner of Independence Avenue and 12th Street. Traffic is being blocked here. And police are here. More tear gas has gone off in the area of the Washington Monument. I can see it from here. Police are moving down the wrong side of the street. Tear gas canisters, and there they come. People are starting to move the other way. They stick those mortars out the window. Fire a single canister, and the intersection is clear.
Rally back here and take the street.
This has fired several canisters now in this area. This is 12th Street and Independence. And demonstrators are dispersing in all directions. The corner of 14th and C Street, where multiple arrests has just taken place. Apparently with the use of some tear gas. About 10 people are lined up along a wall here. How many people were arrested here, officer? Well, officer doesn't want to answer. New York City. The police commissioner of New York City signed up.
We got to have one from our...
No, this is... I'm going to be placed under arrest, maybe. Let's see.
Listen, I've warned you once. You're locked up, too.
I've just been placed under arrest by an officer of the Civil Disturbance Unit. Being led up the street. An officer holding my pants in the back. And I'm being brought together with about 10 other people.
I'd like to see a sergeant, please. I'm a member of the press.
The officer is checking my pockets, emptying out my equipment.
I was just approved by a sergeant a couple of minutes ago. One of the gentlemen over there.
I should have brought him with me.
Well, I'm kneeling against a concrete fence, along with about a dozen other people.
I was walking down the street.
Been placed under arrest.
What
happened to you? I'm a reporter from New York.
I was walking down the street. We were going to leave the city, and the police are walking the other direction. As we pass, they turn us around and make us start walking towards the rest of this area and tell us that we're under arrest for disorderly conduct.
Where were you going?
We were going to Highway 95 South.
Where are you going, home or what?
Going back to school.
Yeah.
They arrested the press?
Well, they're not supposed to, I don't think, but they have this time. I suppose we're waiting for a van to come. I'm wearing a New York City police pass around my neck, which saved me three times this morning, but the fourth time it didn't help at all. I think the problem was I ran into the same officer twice. The number of people online here has grown to about 30. Apparently what the police are doing are arresting people walking on the sidewalks near the Key Bridge, wearing emblems or looking suspicious, I guess. I've spoken to about four or five people in my general area here, and all of them have the same story. They were simply walking down the street, and they were picked up on the sidewalk.
This week's episode was produced and written by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. This program was executive produced by the Pacifica Radio Archives and Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening.